You're listening to a podcast on the Awkward Human Network. If you want to find out more about this show and all the other cool stuff that we do, visit awkwardhuman.com.
Let's talk about you. Welcome to What's Wrong With You. Each episode, we'll ask one guest the same series of four questions.
What's wrong with me? I have a lot of split ends.
Just the next question. Tell me about a time that you failed.
It's a loaded question.
The third one. If you could go back in time and tell yourself one thing, like, how real do you get with people about
it? Well, I don't tell because they think I'm a crazy person.
What would you say?
I'd say prepare everybody else.
I'd say just go in and watch.
You're gonna fuck up and then fess up and then fix it.
Great beard,
sweet beard, man.
Yeah, great beard.
For sure.
Okay. And the last question, when does that come up now? When do you think about that moment or that failure or that lesson? Who am I? I'm your host, Sarah Kleigman. Coming up on this episode of What's Wrong With You, Lily Diamond is the founder of Kale and Caramel, a super successful lifestyle blog that shares all kinds of recipes for DIY body products and delicious, lovingly created recipes. The blog is so successful, in fact, that her first book just came out, Kale and Caramel Recipes for the Body, Heart, and Table. It made the New York Times top summer cookbook lists. You can get it wherever books are sold, and I cannot recommend it enough. It's a cookbook, but Lily is also a very deep soul, as you will soon hear, and a brilliant writer. So get this book if you love to cook, if you love good, heartfelt stories, or even if you just love drool-worthy pictures of food, because there are plenty. Hi, Lily.
Hi, Sarah.
So what is wrong with you?
This question always gets me. I feel like when you utter those words, I can't speak.
Yeah.
So maybe what's wrong with me is that I'm terrified to admit what's wrong with me.
Well, it's a very accusatory statement. I mean, people be like, are you sure you want? Yeah. Is that how the show should
start? Do you really want to know what's wrong with me? I don't think you actually want to know what's wrong with me.
But I do.
I have a desperate, aching, deep need to belong.
Desperate, aching, deep need to belong.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about that.
I grew up feeling like I didn't belong. I grew up in Hawaii as a very, very white person. And I was constantly surrounded by reminders that I didn't belong. I grew up always wishing that I could tan, and of course couldn't. I have red hair and very white skin.
So everyone else was like very Hawaiian looking and you were not?
Yeah, the local aesthetic is, I would say, some combination of Chinese, Japanese, Hawaiian, Pacific Islander.
Did you have any white friends?
Absolutely did. However, most of them were very tan. Mm.
So not only were you just like white, you couldn't even like
exactly
get slightly closer to.
Right. I couldn't even sort of edge myself in towards the norm.
You just turned more red.
Lobster red and then burn and peel and flake and then white. I should say, I don't want to discount the fact that growing up in Hawaii was also glorious in, you know, many of the ways that being close to abundant tropical nature is, and it was beautiful, and I feel very fortunate to have had a life there. And when I left, I think part of my feeling and a sort of identity or looking like other people there drove me to want to go to college on the East Coast. And so,
so you think that like desired, yeah, that informed mm-hmm where you went to school?
Yeah, I think so. I just had this sense that I had a sense that the world was much bigger than my life on Maui, and that I didn't want to just go to a school on the West Coast because it was closer. And I just wanted to see more of what was out there. So I went to college on the East Coast, and while I was there, I ended up sort of deepening into the world of Eastern philosophy and mysticism and religious practice and yoga that I had grown up with my parents on Maui, who were total hippies. I was living in New Haven, Connecticut, the Yale, and I started studying with a yoga teacher there.
And like a studio, or like did the school have stuff?
No. So she actually started a club called Yogis at Yale, or YAY for short.
Oh my God. That I love yoga. I love you. And even that makes me be like, ew. Like, why do I have that reaction? Or like, if someone was just like, are you in yay? I'd be like, no.
So, so I started studying with her, and she was also very deep into the study of Sanskrit and meditation. And she had studied with Sharon Gannon and David Life in New York. They were radical artists in sort of on the Lower East Side in New York, and, you know, were like performance artists and dancers. And so they created the Jiva Mukti Yoga method, and they also taught a lot of the first celebrities like Madonna and Sting, and they were their yoga teachers. Mm. And so they created this yoga empire in New York City, and that continued through, you know, the 90s and into the 2000s. And my first teacher had studied with them.
Was that woman being your teacher? Was that your first time being exposed to that world?
No.
No. So you were familiar.
I was. What changed was that when I was growing up, I was formally studying dance and performing dance, and all of my sort of physical movement energy was focused on that. But when I went to college, I decided that I was going to start studying yoga instead. Mm. And so then suddenly, instead of studying dance, I was spending time studying yoga with my teacher there. And I simultaneously found, again, as you might imagine, there was a lot of culture shock for me in not just the, you know, outside world of being, of suddenly living in New Haven, Connecticut, from living on the side of a mountain surrounded by cows on Maui. I was also extremely cowed academically. Like, I felt very afraid of, you know, I was surrounded by people who had gone to like the top boarding schools and had this very rigorous, intense East Coast academic training that I hadn't had. And I think a part of me, I wanted to keep up with that. And at the same time, I felt very afraid of it. And so as much as I was really working very hard academically, I found myself drawn to this Eastern philosophy and these traditions that were saying, you know, the mind isn't everything. The body also isn't everything. There's a much deeper meaning to things that we can explore if we look into these ancient teachings.
Was it the teachings and the belief system that attracted you most, or like
that feeling of not belonging,
right?
Again, of feeling, you know, like, oh, well, who am I in this new world? I was able to, because I had grown up hearing my parents talk about and really being immersed so much in Eastern philosophies and traditions.
So it was a part of you.
It was totally a part of me. And because of that, it gave me where I felt like I was behind in terms of having the kinds of access to the academic rigor and all that that I saw in other people. I was like way ahead in terms of my understanding of these, you know, traditions and just the kind of language also that the Western mind liked to hear parroted from people who were like oovy groovy, you know, yoga teachers and studying Eastern philosophies. I knew how to speak that language.
Right.
And so I kind of quickly realized that I had this currency where I could totally belong here. And not only could I belong, but I could also kind of excel in a way, which is really ironic because the whole, you know, there shouldn't be any kind of egoic competition involved in
yoga.
In yoga, which, I mean, haha, because there totally
for
is,
sure
right?
Is,
like,
yeah.
That's how yoga studios work.
Yep.
Here.
Yep.
But no, even on like a philosophical level, but I very quickly saw that I had this kind of aptitude and that a lot of it was very genuine, that, you know, there was a way of people coming together in community around teachings that are about healing and truth and goodness. And all of that is totally beautiful. But I really was seduced by this idea that I could actually create an identity
Was it conscious at the time? Like at the time where you were like, I know I can fit in here? Or is it the kind of thing that when you look back, you're like, oh, this is where that path started, where that wasn't 100% authentic to me. And part of the thing that informed that was that desire. Like in that moment when you were making those choices, was that conscious, do you think?
No.
No.
I don't think it was conscious at all. I think that, but it's really definitely hindsight 2020. And I will say that this, you know, the deep human longing that we have to belong is always with us, right? Yeah. And so it is driving decisions that we make all the time, often without us knowing at all. So I don't think I saw it in that way at the time, but I also think I definitely had that urge to want to belong. You know, I took a deep dive into that world and I ended up meeting my first like real serious deep love there. And after I graduated, we had done our yoga teacher training together, and I ended up moving to Michigan to do further training and to live and study and work with him. And I sort of had this idea that we were going to create this whole life together and like yoga mega couple world together.
Higher power couple, if you will.
Totally. And seeing the dissolution of that, which we can also get into, but having that come crashing down at the same time as another really huge belief system for me came crashing down, which was that my mother was diagnosed with stage 3C endometrial cancer a couple days after that breakup happened.
Days.
It was terrible, terrible timing.
Yeah.
And basically the structures of my world as I knew it fell apart.
Just
because my mother, you know, the yogini, the consummate health expert, she had gotten sick. All of the things that she had spent her entire life working to prevent had happened. And so suddenly, not only did I start to realize, well, maybe the beliefs that I have held on to or that I've even espoused to others aren't totally true, I also started to feel like, do I even actually believe them? And so,
by the way, that's so many things to happen at once developmentally as a person, because all of your spiritual belief systems were in question. And you just had your first, was it your first love?
Yeah.
God, I would just be a fucking mess. Were you just a mess?
It was my second love, but yes, I was a huge mess. I was a huge mess, but at the same time, I was still upholding this idea that I was like a spiritual leader of some kind in terms of being a yoga teacher. Mm-hmm. The lineage that I was a part of very much focused on the practice of yoga being a spiritual practice and really trying to find ways to make yoga current and real and in this world, as opposed to a world that's thousands of years old. And so I was still holding on to that idea that I could guide people or lead people somehow, even as everything around me was falling apart. And of course, that's the nature of the world. Like everything will always be falling apart.
Yeah, it turns out.
And so it doesn't mean that in the midst of that, you can't also be of support to other people. And at the same time, I slowly started having this feeling, this like creeping awareness of how young I was, how little I did know, how many questions I had of my own. So I wasn't ready to give answers to other people when I didn't have the answers myself.
Right. This feels like a good transition to your failure story.
Yes. I've touched upon so many elements of the failure already. It was sort of a failure laced throughout. But I think the clearest moment when I realized that something was really going wrong repeatedly was about 6 months after my mother had died. I was teaching yoga. I was teaching full time. And I would go to teach a class. And the moment that I would start the class, I would hear this voice clear as a bell in my head say, stop teaching. And it was terrifying because it was that was how I made my living. And it wasn't like a voice from on high. If I had to put a name to it, I would say that it was literally my own voice. There was so much tied up in my, everything was tied up in my identity as a yoga teacher, as this person who held a certain kind of wisdom, as this sort of, you know, young wunderkind of yoga and mysticism. And I freaking had a harmonium and like, like in it deep. I was meditating hours every day. And for me, that need to belong had become insidious almost, like, you know, to the degree that it had, it was holding my ability to be true to myself captive. And so,
you stayed in this world because you knew it and you were accepted there and you knew how to be that person that people needed.
Bingo.
You knew how to fill that role.
Exactly.
And the support and structure of that community was really stabilizing, especially given all the other shit that was happening in your life.
Yes. And so as I started to hear the voice, I remember there was a day where I was sitting with friends and I kind of told them about it. And they said, well, why don't you just take some time off? And I said, because I need to pay my rent.
Right.
And they said, well, come and live with us. Like, come and live in our guest house for 3 months.
It's remarkable how often when you just start naming the things that you want to change or the things that you want. It's remarkable how things just
absolutely
start to happen.
Yeah. And so they said, come, you know, come live in our guest house for 3 months. And I turned and looked at them and said, do you mean that? Because I will literally stop tomorrow. And they said, yeah, we totally mean it. And so
where were you when you had that conversation?
Sitting on the beach at sunset. Roll your eyes now.
No, it's great. No, that was good.
I know.
I was like, oh God, how much more like perfect could that be?
I know.
Wow.
I know.
So you were sitting on the beach at sunset.
Sitting on the beach at sunset on Maui.
And that's when you had that moment.
Yeah.
Where you, and you saw your out. And your out wasn't just an out. It was an out that was a good bridge because it was with friends. It was with people that you already accepted.
It was with friends who totally accepted me and got that I was needed to take this space. And I also had very clearly the desire to step back into writing, which was always my first love. Like, writing for me had been a refuge from the time that I was tiny. I would come home from school and write short stories that basically featured me with a, you know, changing cast of best friends and relatives and cousins and like fake people who loved me because I just wanted to feel like
you built that world.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to read those books.
I wish I still had them.
Gosh.
I know. So yeah, so I really wanted to get back to writing and I was kind of thinking that I would do a writing workshop somewhere away. Like on Maui.
Back up for a minute for me.
Well, the failure story isn't over because I went back to teaching, and I went back to teaching once a week after 3 months, and I only went back because I felt like I owed it to the students, to be as transparent with them as I could be without totally saying like, "Hey,
Santa Claus
yoga,
yeah."
Like, remember who I was before? Now I just, you know, eat hamburgers and like lay by the pool all day, that's not true at all. But
essentially, because you were going from spiritual leader, vegan.
Yeah.
To
not.
Yeah.
To yeah.
Yeah.
And so what I decided was I don't want to be making a living based off of teaching. So I started working again as a freelance editor. And a copywriter and copy editor. And I then went back into the studio with a commitment to be really honest with my students. And so I changed even the language of how I taught. So for example, there's so much really deeply religiously tinged language in yoga. Like teachers will say, like, put your hands into prayer position. And I ended up taking out language even of that nature. Anything that felt like it had a direct tie to the religious components that I had a very clear sense that I didn't believe in anymore. I didn't feel comfortable standing up there and pushing that onto people.
So what did you do?
I just said, put your hands together. And I became aware so quickly of all of these different elements of, you know, the religion that is embedded into that language. And I also had a sense that so much of what was happening in the yoga world was happening because of this sort of manic quest to become like the yoga teacher star. At that point in the US and other places in the West, like, but predominantly the US, like, there was a whole culture of capitalism around yoga and teaching yoga that still exists. That was, you know, contingent on mostly young, attractive women sort of thrusting themselves into a position of power in front of students based on the fact that they can stand on their heads.
Yeah.
And then are therefore spiritual leaders.
What did you do? Like, what happened next?
I told my students, I said, like, I am having a lot of questions myself.
You were like,
this.
God isn't real. I
God
need to go.
Real. Have I got a peace out now. I was very transparent with them while also saying, like, this is an ongoing process that I'm going through. You know, I just watched my mother die in the midst of having a ton of questions about her own belonging and religion and spiritual identity because she had chosen to follow a path of kind of eclectic, like, grab and go spirituality of like, well, I like this. I like, you know, that sort of potpourri of pleasantries that we can
potpourri of pleasantries.
Yeah, of like spiritual pleasantries that we in the West have the ability to co-opt because we can, and then say, well, like, I just believe in like goodness and love.
Spiritual appropriation, is that a thing?
Yeah. Yes, very much. Yeah. And I ended up taking this wonderful Art of Memoir masterclass that I found on Maui, complete fluke. I thought I was gonna have to fly to, you know, I was like, I gotta go east. I gotta get away from the hippies. And instead, I ended up finding this incredible memoirist and author, Rebecca Walker, who was teaching a masterclass the week that I was leaving my teaching at the studio. And I took the course, and in the process of sharing my writing with the other students in this class and also continuing to then excavate after the class and really work closely with Rebecca, who continued and continues to be an incredible mentor for me. But some of the first feedback I got in that course was like, everything that you're saying sounds really nice, but we don't actually know what you're talking about. Mm. And it was because I was still trying to gloss over so much and I was sort of in that world of like there are so many ways to talk about it, but in the sort of New Age world, one of the terms is that gets thrown around is spiritual bypassing. And it's basically where, you know, you
two yoga
it's a kind
people
of
pass
sublim-
each other in the freeway.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I get it.
yeah. And it's a sublimation of sorts where you say, well, like, everything in my life is terrible and I actually feel horrible and like I'm lying to myself and everyone around me, but like, it's okay because we're all one and like nothing really matters because we're all just like atoms floating around in space.
I want to go back to something you just said, which was the, because I'm trying to nail down like what the failure was, right? And what you just said in that sort of list of things was lying to yourself.
Absolutely. And so I got this huge reflection that was like, okay, like we get that, we get your mother's death and your, you know, the leaving yoga and this whole collapsing of all these belief systems. But like, what's actually going, like what
do you
actually think? Right.
Yeah.
Like, what do you actually think? Because it can't just be that there are all these like really fucked up things and they were really sad and now you're fine.
Right.
And so it took this kind of willingness to all of a sudden say, oh my God, I think that I've actually been lying to myself.
Yeah.
And I've actually been so many of these places where I just like let myself coast or did this spirit, you know, one form of spiritual bypassing or another in order to say, well, like, no, it's fine. Like, I feel really terrible about this, or I don't believe this, or what do you mean that like we're going to chant and then stand on our heads and it's going to make us better people. And like, what? Like that, what are you even talking about?
I woke up
and I was like, what have I been telling myself?
So when does that come up for you now? And is it, when it comes up, is it, I mean, I'm sure it's a bunch of things, but the thing that I feel like is super relatable is like the sort of like denial, lying to yourself part of it. So when does that come up for you now, whether it's that part of it or being motivated by wanting to have, you know, a community around you? Like, when do those things factor in these days?
It's both, because the belonging for me isn't just community. It's like that central wound, and maybe it's the central wound of just like being severed from our mothers when we come out, that comes up for me all the time. Like when I'm longing for relationship, when I'm longing for, you know, whatever it is, that wherever I find meaning, I consistently have to remind myself, like, don't shove yourself into one mold or another. And whatever it might be, whether it's work or relationship or whatever it is, just to wake up and say, like, if I were to be really honest with myself, I would say X. And for whatever reason, in the wake of that heartbreak and my mom's death, something cracked open in me where that fill in the blank was like, nope, I'm not going to wait for you to ask me that question. I actually am going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
You need to stop teaching.
Yeah.
Because this is not who you really are.
Right.
And I think that fundamentally is the lesson. It's okay. Like, whatever that fill in the blank is, you know, when I check in with myself, is fine, because the person that I am, that you are, that, you know, Joe Schmo is far more interesting just in and of themselves without adding anything on or like shoving them into some kind of pre-existing structure than we could ever imagine. And so for me to remember that, and to remember that really, you know, I've gotten to write and share stories and, you know, in varying ways teach through the work that I do now, which is through my blog and my site and my book, Kale and Caramel, in ways that are so much deeper and more meaningful, because they're just about me being honest.
Right. I want to tell this little story about Jim Carrey.
Yes, please.
He gave this commencement speech, but he tells this story about watching his dad, who was a banker, and hated his job. His dad hated being a banker, or he was in finance or something. He was really unfulfilled. And he was also a comedian. His dad wanted to do more comedy. And then one day, his dad came home from work and told the family that he was fired. And so Jim looked at that happening. He saw his dad fail at something he didn't love. And so he thought, if I can fail at something I don't love, then I might as well fail at something I do love. I think it all ties together.
Yeah, absolutely. There's this little strange practice that I started keeping for myself when I emerged from this time. And that is that I sort of endeavor to do something at least once a day that surprises me, because it's so easy to let ourselves fall into the rut of whatever identity we might, you know, have assumed for ourselves.
How do you surprise yourself? Do you like wrap presents, like switch them around behind your back, put them in front of you?
No. Yes.
Just send a random, just delete all the names in your phone book and send a text and just like see
who could it be?
Response.
No. In terms of really like, so for example, when I started, you know, as I mentioned, I was raised vegetarian and then was vegan for about 3 years. And there was a period where, after I went through my mom dying and that whole experience of caring for her and watching her eating habits really shift as she needed different things nutritionally through the cancer and all that, I realized that there was so much food that I was really afraid of trying and eating. And so when I said like, okay, I'm going to actually try some of these foods that I've for so long been scared of eating. And so for me, surprising myself was like, okay, this is a way that I can check that I am not just
complacent.
I'm not complacent in my day-to-day life. I'm not complacent in the way that I am sitting with myself. So it's not just about scaring myself for like some external reason. It's about really...
It's going to send you boxes with like spring snakes in them and be like, you asked for this. Oh,
God. What about like a challah?
I guess, yeah, fine.
Okay.
Can there be a spring in the hot? It's fine.
Yeah. Like a jack in the box in the middle of like an apple cinnamon challah.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Great. Oh, that's fine. But it's not necessarily that it scares you. It's like, I need to get in there and wake that part of myself up. I keep thinking about how when you first asked what's wrong with you, I couldn't answer.
Yeah.
Because that is truly the problem. Like it's so scary for me to really say, well, like, okay, here are my cards. This is what's wrong with me.
Yeah.
Does everybody feel like that?
I love that you're asking that. I will say that first question, everyone freezes in their tracks.
Okay, good. I'm not alone.
No, you're not.
I need to belong.
You, you do belong. No one, everyone is afraid of what's wrong with them. You fit right in.
Great. Thank God.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Sarah.
Find out more about today's guests or leave me a message at whatswrongwithyoupodcast.com. If you like the show, please share it with a friend or five and leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play. Thanks for listening.